WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Hip hip hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. It's going to be a beautiful day today. And, of course, this is the Greg Tucker Show today. It's Tuesday. Good morning. And I want everybody to know that your show this morning is sponsored by Metal Max Roofing and Siding, located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro. Steel is a unique material that can be recycled, conserving energy and natural resources. Steel is also an excellent cost-effective alternative to asphalt shingle roofs. Metal roofs are beautiful, resistant to wind damage, roof rust, and some are less expensive than asphalt shingles. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today and let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max Roofing and Siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693. Pull them up on the website, www.metalmaxllc.com. You know, Greg, sometimes things happen at the worst times, and my refrigerator went out Saturday.
Well, that's bad. It always is on the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I think it actually went out on Friday, but because things started changing inside the refrigerator. So I said, I've got to get this done, and I don't want to wait till Monday, because you like to have certain things in a refrigerator to keep you going. So I went to Smyrna and at Steve John's Appliance, and got to see an old buddy of mine, Albert.
That's a well-established business.
Yes, it is.
Been there a few years.
Yes, and Albert has been there a long time, back when it was Paul Johns and Sons, before Steve took it over. And Albert's still working there, and I want to say good morning to Albert. He's been there so long, and he's such a good guy, and he always takes care of me and the loading and unloaded all the stuff there. So I just wanted to mention Albert's name this morning. I know it's your show, but I just wanted to do that.
Albert, thank you for keeping Truman in cold stuff during the weekend.
Yes. Now, you have written...
You reminded me, Metal Max Roofing pointed out that it's environmentally appropriate because it can be reused.
Yes.
You know, one of my mentors when I took up farming here in Rutherford County was William Roy Arnold, and he taught me, when you're building a new shed or barn, always put new metal on the roof, but you always use the recycled metal for the exterior walls. And
what?
Yeah. So next time you know somebody pulling off a roof, let me know. I got some exterior barn siding that I need to replace.
Is that something that's only done in the country, right?
Well, it may be only Donald's Chapel, but if you'll come inspect my buildings, they all got good solid new roof metal. At least 30 years ago, it was. And I bet I've got some metal wrapping around the old zinc metal that's been reused and reused and reused. But
well, where you live, you really can't utilize any advertisements for your barn, can you? Because there's not many people that would be going to Rock City or any of those other
places. I don't know of a single Rock City in Donald's Chapel. Donald's Chapel was in the news on Sunday, though. You know that?
Oh, really? No.
Oh, yes. There's a big write-up. Had a beautiful picture of a newborn.
Ooh.
Yes. Born in Donald's Chapel, home birth.
Uh-huh.
Cora Haven Tucker, my granddaughter.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, first time Donald's Chapel's been in the news pages here lately. But
who's smiling more, you or Mentorette, this morning?
She's smiling all the time. She got to spend 2 hours taking care of the baby yesterday
while I was
out running errands.
But, yeah.
I'm going to get my turn this weekend, I think. Maybe even tonight.
There's nothing like them, is there? And especially as you get older in life, you appreciate it more. I've never seen Bud Mitchell love anything as much as he loves Lincoln. And Lincoln's right at a year old now.
Is that right?
Yeah, and he's just absolutely crazy about that kid.
Well, I've got a two-year-old grandson that is a joy also. Every day we have to get a report on what he's learned, what he's done. And he's out there in Jakestown.
Oh, Jakestown is the center of the world.
Well, that's a good community to grow up in.
Yes, it was. It was the best community in the world. Now,
I feel like we ought to comment on the historical aspects of the election if you haven't already run through all that.
What election?
With other guests. No, seriously, I think you and I discussed before that, in fact, we talked about the only time.
Oh, it's not over with yet either.
Well, as far as the local elections.
Well, it's a local election.
Is it?
Kinda.
But independents. Mm-hmm. We had a number of independents, particularly in the judiciary, but I think we also had one independent candidate elected to the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that an independent slate, you might call it, has had any success in Rutherford County. And I think that's very significant. And also, I think, speaks very well for the voting community, because it suggests at least that many voters were looking beyond partisan labels,
at least in that area.
Yeah, and we're voting for individuals or for known names that had been proven. So I think that's, and I'm sure the parties will take note that a quality candidate running as an independent is a viable candidate in this county now. I think that's the lesson we got out of that.
I think also on the other hand, when you're looking at that, they were almost running as a group together. I think that carried a lot of strength with it, although one of the judges was beaten.
Yeah,
in a very, very close race. Actually, I was a little bit shocked about that one. I'm quite shocked.
But we would be speaking, even without the other races, that race, to have an independent come that close would have been impressive.
Right.
But, of course, we had, I think, four independents actually winning races. So I think that's a positive sign. And I think it speaks well of the electorate that, we'll go beyond the party labels.
You know, at one time, I think that you could run almost under anything. Although there was kind of a stigma against Republicans, remember, back in the 40s and the 50s and during that time. And just like it seemed like to be a stigma against the Democrats now. And the thing about it is the stigma does not come from your community. It comes from, starts in Washington and comes on down, because that's how they view the people who are running under a political label, is how it's done on the national level.
Well, it'll be interesting over the next few years. When will we have the first local race where independents run against independents and the party labels aren't even directly involved?
Our next one's 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years out. And I wouldn't be surprised in the next 3 or 4 2-year cycles we'll see qualified candidates running against qualified candidates on the independent label.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be locally anyway.
Yeah, I don't think the party identity does much for us at all in these local races.
No, actually, it's detrimental to the candidates. Whichever party it has the strength at that particular time, that's where most of them will line up.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the people in Rutherford County do not know the background of the candidates like they used to. I mean, that's
a function of size in part and distraction. There was another encouraging aspect, too, that looks into what we might expect in the future. We had one race, a commission race, that was there was a very aggressive internet campaign, very negative, defamatory in some aspects, and apparently that was pretty much ignored, which may mean that in some of our rural districts, people don't paying attention to the internet, but also I think, again, speaks well to the electorate that, you know, the internet still is wide open. It seems like you can get away with an awful lot of things that, you know, in other media or in direct spoken context you couldn't do. And people are willing to because some of the anonymity. But that apparently was also not effective. And I think that speaks well of the electorate, that we're not going to be moved by internet campaigns that, you know, go heavy negative.
This conversation is getting so interesting that Brian wants to put his 2 cents worth in.
No, I just want to ask a question because it got, when he was talking about county commission and close races, I don't know that there was one any closer than in District 21 between Chanto and Patsy Briley. And you know, they came out and said all the votes in that district are in, and Patsy Briley wins by one vote. But then there were the provisional ballots.
Yeah.
And that's what we're waiting on in the, you know, District 4 congressional race. A lot of people don't know what these provisional ballots are and why they're there. And has Rutherford County already counted theirs? Because that changed the vote by four, and Chanto wins by three. So I thought maybe that would be something you could talk about.
Well, again, the provisional ballots are something that has risen in significance because of the voter ID requirement.
Right.
So, you know, if you showed up to vote, and even if you had been registered and voting all your life at the same place, if you didn't have your photo ID, you could not register your vote at that time. But wisely, we have a backup system, which is the provisional ballot. So you fill out a paper ballot, you get all your vote down, and you have, I think, our here we said you had 5 days or 4 days to come to the election commission, present your photo ID, and then be counted. I hope it'll diminish in significance because we'll all be in the habit of you know, going to the polls with whatever we need. And obviously the early voting, you know, you've got plenty of time to take care of that detail.
But the people that it hurts the most are the retired people who no longer have to have their photos on the driver's license and things like that.
That's right.
They're kind of the victims.
Again, that's where, you know, we got to do a little more planning. And those requirements are being challenged in some jurisdictions. So there may be some changes over the next cycle of elections. And from a historic point of view, it's hard not to wonder if the motive is something other than what is being discussed by the proponents. I know when it first came up, I thought we have not had problems, at least in this jurisdiction, with voter fraud for many, many years.
Right.
And so, you know, what is the problem we're addressing? And I think the courts, when they look at it, have been struggling with what really is the interest being served here. But if we are going to be required to have photo ID at the time you go vote, I think eventually the electorate will reflexively, you know, be prepared for that. And we may start issuing non-driver photo IDs or something like that to be sure that that's something that can easily be obtained.
Don't you get tired of the power structures trying to gain more power all the time? I used to have, I guess, an innocent look at the way politics was, and that the right people would always get elected in, and we knew them pretty much, I guess, as the type of people that may be holding those particular offices they're running for. I mean, just like this thing with Ramsey, all that money going in toward eliminating the present the appellate judges and the state Supreme Court judges and things like that.
That's one of those things.
That really does bother me. And I don't care which party it is or anything like that. Let the people make these decisions.
That's a little bit of a devil you know. Those of us who have come into Tennessee since about 1970-something Before then, we had a popular election of judges.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that judges were out, Supreme Court justices were having to travel around the state with campaign entourages, passing out buttons, soliciting votes, doing whatever was the norm at the time. Of course, all of them back then were Democrats, but in the primaries, they would be out mm-hmm. on the hustings with everybody else, putting up their signs and such. And we recognized back in the 70s that that was not a good system mm-hmm. for judicial officers. And so we adopted what back then was called the Missouri Plan, because the state of Missouri was the first to do it. And instead of going to the federal procedure, which is appointment by the executive with an advice and consent from the legislature, instead of going to that, we put together this hybrid system where they were appointed on recommendation from the bar, Bar Association, and then every 8 years would be subject to basically a recall mm-hmm. vote, which means we got them halfway out of having to be politicians, but not entirely. So it was kind of funny that, you know, when they actually had to confront the system as it was intended, you know, we start complaining again about politicizing mm-hmm. the, you know, what we were trying to do was to set up a hybrid system where it was half political and half appointive on merit.
But then you have an individual who takes it upon himself in the political campaign money that he's got to fund that, to have them all the bums thrown out without any information whatsoever on each one of the judges. And we're just going to throw them all out all together, and then we'll start all over again.
Yeah, the common element seems to be they were appointed by a Democratic governor. And, that was but again, the electorate seemed to figure it out.
Yeah. And we did have some experts that were on. Unfortunately, it was after the early voting. But we did have them on, and a number of people were glad that they did come on and explain some of the things that were going on with each other. And we do have a caller on the line. Okay. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you all doing?
We're good, Casey. How are you?
Pretty good. I heard you say something about the power structure, and you all are talking about voting. You know what bothers me about voting? We've been told the same story for all my life about voting and how, you know, it's the only way and it's really working and all this kind of stuff. But it seems like we never get out of the hole. And you brought up something about power. Is it true that 80% of the same people continue to get voted in? Is that true?
I couldn't tell you that.
I don't know about a percentage, but incumbents always have an advantage.
Oh.
Yeah, if you look at any election, unless the incumbent has really stumbled.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The incumbent has a significant advantage at the outset.
Or a power, or a party goes into power that's not currently part of the ones that are in. It changes things abruptly. Just like when it used to be the Democrats at one time, now it's the Republicans here.
Well, are we getting any better?
Are we getting any better?
Yes, sir.
No.
We're...
Hallelujah.
The problem that we've got now is, especially uh-oh. As Rutherford County has gotten larger, and I guess the state of Tennessee has gotten larger, is the people are not aware or as educated to the individuals that are running as much as they used to be able to. You don't have that close proximity for families and things like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're all taught from the time we're old enough to understand it, that we have a duty to vote. And many people, particularly newcomers coming in, have been taught you vote. And we encourage everybody to get out and vote. But I had a conversation with one of our local elders, and I asked him about his voting. And he says, well, I voted in this race and that race, but I didn't vote in the certain race because I didn't know anything about those people.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just vote on somebody. And, you know, I wish we could teach people that your obligation is to be informed, to know who you're voting for, mm-hmm. why you're voting for them, and what the office is. Because otherwise we have people latching on to things like he's a handsome candidate or this particular party, he's a, you know, mm-hmm. and not voting with any real information or really any good intent as to, you know, what they're trying to accomplish with their vote. So I'm not real big on just plain right. get out to vote. Everybody's got to go vote. I think it's a matter of let's make informed decisions.
Yeah. Still on, Casey?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. So we still haven't come over down for that one.
We still haven't what?
We still haven't come up with a good answer, have we?
Well, the answer would be that there's an old saying that came out of England.
Okay.
And it came from Winston Churchill.
All right.
And he said, "Do you know what the problem is with democracy?"
Uh-oh.
And do you know what it is?
The problem of the people.
Yeah, if you want to know what it is, talk to the average voter for 5 minutes and you'll know what it is. Because they're not taking the time to inform themselves about each individual candidate.
That is so true. And that's very dangerous to vote when you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
That is so true. Appreciate y'all. I'm listening.
Thank you, Casey. We have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Good morning, Truman.
Good morning.
I just have one comment. I listen to political stuff all the time, and I'm not a really political person. I've got a lot of opinions that would irritate a lot of people. But I don't believe anybody should be given a job for life. I don't think Supreme Court justices should have jobs for life, because once you get a job like that, you don't have to answer to anybody. And people change, ideas change. I think there ought to be limits on how long judges serve. I think there ought to be limit on how long senators serve. You know, there are guys who have served in the United States Senate who were 93 years old, feeble, and you know that's not the way the world ought to work. It's just. When you've had your opportunity to do something, it's time for you to get out and let somebody else do it. And when those people get there and stay, that's what causes problems. When people get elected in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and go to Washington, D.C., after a few years, they start changing. And I heard you yesterday, were talking to your guest, and he was talking about Al Gore Jr. and Al Gore Sr.
Right.
And it's a different world. And people who live here and move to Washington, a Democrat, you can vote for a Democrat here, and in 10 years, a Democrat from here is more like a Democrat from New York City. And you can't tell me that a Democrat in New York City is the same as a Democrat in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
What you're saying is exactly right, because Albert Gore Sr. was one of the Smith County folks. I mean, he was very bright. He had a great career in front of him. But the thing about it is the people that you're listening to most of the time are in Washington rather than in Smith County. So there's a lot of merit to what you're saying.
I worked in the last Al Gore Sr. campaign. And he had changed. On several occasions, one time I actually handed him the fiddle and mm-hmm. asked him to play.
Uh-huh.
And he would not. He refused, because that was not within the dignity of the office. He was a sitting senior senator. And you remember how he got elected to start with. He fiddled his way into office by entertaining and playing. People do change in the...
He fiddled his way out, too.
Yeah, they say it has something to do with the water, the Potomac River water.
Yeah, he got the fever. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it has something to do with the power of your mind.
Right, right.
Everybody wants to be more powerful, so you start dealing with other people who are completely different from you, and you give in on your ideas to further something, and then next thing you know, it's all falling apart.
Yeah.
I know it's not going to happen while I'm still alive, but it should. So, thank you for your time.
I think we are all in agreement on that. Great guest. I loved some of the things that he was saying, and I agree with most of it. Now, the thing about the Supreme Court justices, since it's been brought up, do what?
Are we still?
Yeah,
on the phone
call? He's gone. What I was alluding to the Supreme Court justices are appointed pretty much for life, as the ones that we've got here. Of course, the ones here have to go through that electoral process.
Yeah, that was the compromise, because back in the 70s when the new system was brought in, there was, like our caller, a very strong sentiment that they needed to be answerable at periodically answerable to the public voters. So that's why that's what just occurred.
Well, we have another caller on the line.
I hadn't gotten my history yet.
The caller, we'll get back to it. Welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Hey, Truman and Greg, appreciate your time this morning, having me on. I want to make a comment about the judges. And you say, you've talked about Ron Ramsey and it being political and the money he put into it. But, you know, I think we all are guilty sometimes of just looking at the last 5 or 10 years, and we tend to remember that. But
right.
You did mention the Tennessee and Missouri plan. And back in the 70s, and Greg, you correct me, or Truman, you correct me if I'm incorrect on this, okay? But it was political back then, because part of the deal to switch to the Missouri plan was a compromise with the Democrats and the Republicans in the legislature at that time, particularly, and I don't know if it was would McWhorter have been Speaker of the House in the 70s? I think he would have.
I think anyway, you're right. He was.
He was influential in any event.
The Democrats were in control, and UT was wanting to have, and they knew that to go to the Missouri plan, they were giving, I think Dunn had just been elected. Was it Winfield, the first Republican after the Reconstruction?
Yes, he was.
The Democrats realized they were getting ready. If they went to the Missouri plan that the Republicans were in, they were going to be able to control the appointment to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court takes care of the Attorney General of the state of Tennessee. They appoint the Attorney General, if I think I'm correct on
that.
Yeah.
And so they made a deal with the legislature that the Republicans wanted the medical school in Johnson City. And at that point, McWhorter and the Democrats said, okay, we'll give you your East Tennessee medical school if you'll vote for the modified Tennessee plan, called the Missouri plan, so that we can continue to appoint who we want at the Supreme Court and get it approved. And I don't know if it, at that time they put in the judicial panel that approves.
Yeah, that came in.
Greg, do you know if that happened at that or in the late 80s, early 90s? That may have been
It may have been a second step, but that's what we got now.
But it was a trade-off. It was political back then because of the medical school at UT. I mean, in Johnson City. So and there again, I don't know all the genesis of that, but there was politics then, there's politics now. And the whole purpose now is because of the Affordable Care Act, and because our current sitting attorney general did not join the other 35 states in the lawsuit, that's why the Tennessee legislature, dominated by the Republicans, are upset that our attorney general did not join the other states.
Right. I think you've pinpointed what really was going on in this last election. I think there was, obviously, they had to target the justices, but the real issue was the who selects the state attorney general, and therefore controls that office.
Jay Hooker is playing in. John Jay's playing into this because
no, please,
this thing may not be constitutional because they violated their own rules of who they've appointed to that judicial committee.
I just wish someone other than John Jay was bringing the legal action.
But the judges have ruled in his favor at this point, so that someone's got to decide that point is whether or not this is a legally constitutional election of what just happened. So this is a real mess, and I want to get off and let y'all finish talking about it, okay?
We're through.
Yeah, when John Jay Hooker's name came up, it changed the whole line of conversation, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break.
When When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help you devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs.
My name is Denise. I'm a scheduling care coordinator here at Home Care. I always want to make sure that both the client and the caregiver are in comfortable situations and that they enjoy each other's company and not think of it as a service.
Everybody needs a little help now and then, and At Home Care is here to help.
My name is Maria Ramirez, and I'm a healthcare coordinator for At Home Care. And what we do is personal care and support services for elderly and disabled. We also have young people that we work with. Quad and paraplegics. On a daily basis, we schedule for these people that have needs, whether it's transportation, errands, housekeeping, personal needs. These are some of the things that we do.
Find out more at homecaretn.com or by calling 713-4639.
Prices are for base buildings only and may not be available in some areas. This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. So call General Steel now for the quality and the price in a pre-engineered steel building that you just can't beat. That's right, General Steel can save you thousands of dollars with a pre-engineered steel building designed for your business or church. How much can you save? How about a 50 by 100 foot building for under $35,000? So don't pay thousands more than you should without calling General Steel first. Call 800-98-STEEL today and save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. Don't let rising steel prices put your project in jeopardy. Call now to lock in your price for 3 months. Call 800-98-STEEL. That's 800-98-STEEL. Don't spend thousands more than you should. Call 800-987-8335.
One man is dead following a shooting. I'm Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. That shooting took place at a home on Emerson Court between the John Bragg Highway and Woodbury Pike in the Murfreesboro area. The incident occurred about 11 o'clock Monday night. According to the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, a 29-year-old man was shot dead in front of the house. Reports indicate a woman in her 40s was also found shot, but she was still alive. The woman believed to be the mother of the victim's girlfriend was taken to Vanderbilt Medical Center. Her condition has not been released. Another person at the home and not seriously injured was taken into custody by sheriff's deputies. The motive for the shooting has not been released, nor were the identities of the people involved. Well, some people thought it was a conspiracy. There was a power failure Thursday night. About 8:30, after the power had been down for about 15 minutes, several people were heard seriously discussing theories that the power outage had something to do with candidates shutting the power off before the election results were tallied. That's not the case. According to Middle Tennessee Electric Membership Corporation spokesman Josh Clendenin, a substation which powers all of Woodbury, other parts of Cannon County, and into the Kittrell community of Rutherford County, blew during due equipment failure caused by the storms passing through. Middle Tennessee Electric membership crews quickly identified the situation, but the damage was more extensive than they first thought, and that was the reason for the 90-minute power outage. On Friday, August 22nd, the NAACP Murfreesboro branch will hold their annual Freedom Fund banquet. It'll take place at Patterson Park Community Center at 7 p.m. Guest speaker, Dr. H. James Williams, president of FISC. This is WGNS News.
Brought to you by
Kester Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center on Broad across from Chevrolet of Murfreesboro.
For 25 years, I've enjoyed helping thousands of your friends and neighbors find relief from pain. For a free consultation, give me a call at 895-1253.
Brought to you by Account Temps, providing businesses flexible staffing solutions for all their accounting and finance workload needs. Learn more at accounttemps.com/flexible staffing, a Robert Half company.
Get out of the house. Turn off the computers, the cell phones, and video games. It's time to create some family memories with your mom, dad, your children, or your spouse. Or maybe just spend some quality time with your friends. I'm Randy Boland, Murfreesboro Outdoors, on Northwest Broad Street between Highway 840 and Thompson Lane. Me and my staff treat people the way we would like to be treated when shopping for fishing, hunting, or shooting supplies. Murfreesboro Outdoors, open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 on Northwest Broad Street. I'm Randy Boland. Now, turn off the computers and go hunting or fishing.
Weather Eye.
A few spotty showers and storms here early this afternoon. A blend of clouds and sunshine, a high in the lower 80s. And winds out of the northwest around 10 to 15 miles per hour. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 77.
Premier Six Theater on Broad and Jackson Heights. Showing all of your favorite movies. Call their hotline, 896-4100, or goseeamovie.com. Popcorn pop fresh daily. Their movie hotline, 896-4100, or goseeamovie.com. Premier Six on Broad and Jackson Heights.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And this part of Greg Tucker's show is brought to you by Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat. 7 out of 10 Americans suffer a hearing loss after the age of 50. Now, there is a way to restore your hearing, and you need to give Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat a call today. Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat has been Rutherford County's trusted provider of taking care of all the coughing, sneezing, and stuffed-up feelings for almost 2 decades. Their team of caring physicians, audiologists, nurses, and administrators are standing ready for you and your family so you can improve your style of healthy living. They also have a mobile hearing unit that will actually come to your home, diagnose, and fit you with a hearing device right in the comfort of your living room. Call Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat today at 848-9265. That's 848-9265.
All right, it's time for your examination.
Oh, gosh. I thought we was going to get back. Before I forget it, when I do the Good Morning Rutherford County, what did it remind you of this morning?
Oh, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, Good Morning Vietnam.
Yep.
And he's gone.
Yeah, I heard a prominent television announcer say when he was young, he's obviously much younger than us, he ran around yelling, "Good morning, Vietnam!"
Wow.
And his ambition was to be a radio DJ.
Bless
anyway,
his heart.
this is not a law. I'll give you a little edge to start with. This is not a law enforcement issue,
oh,
but
great.
It relates to something that you are quite an expert on.
Oh, give me another
break. Oh, yeah. In fact,
thanks for setting me up.
Yeah.
Now knock me out.
Today is exactly the 75th anniversary of a very significant Hollywood event. And something that I know you keep up with because you advise me along the matters of Hollywood productions.
75 years ago.
Today.
Today.
Yep.
A great event, a Hollywood event.
Yep, something that had an incredible and lasting impact on our culture.
Now I got to go back and count the what is 75 years ago from today?
Well, that would make it pre-World War II.
Pre-World War II.
But not by much.
Uh-huh.
Changed not only the idiom, but what we expect to see when we go.
What was it, 1939 you're talking about?
Something in that range. I've given you so many hits, you ought to just fall over.
You're not talking about Gone with the Wind, are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm all over the place. I can't play. That's not 19. What is this? 2000. It's 2014.
You seen any black and white movies lately?
No.
Well, that's a hint.
No, color was not invented 75 years ago.
75 years ago today, people went to the opening of this show, and they sat there and watched black and white.
Wow.
And when that show ended, it was in full Technicolor.
Well, you know, what I was thinking about was sound, but that was after sound.
Well, now I've essentially told you what it was. Well, what happened?
What do you mean, what happened? Sound.
No.
What happened?
Today, 75 years ago, was the opening of the movie called The Wizard of Oz.
Now, The Wizard of Oz came out in 1939.
Well, count back 75
years. Oh, that
years
is
ago.
75. I was saying 1939. I was all over it.
Oh, boy, what a lousy performance. No, that was what, although there had been some color.
I'm leaving right now. You've got the rest of the show all to yourself. You set me up and kicked me in the head and in the rear end at the same time.
Yeah, and I rely on you to keep me posted on what's good on movies, both now and
yeah,
the classics.
Yeah, you bring it up and confuse me.
Well, you remember The Wizard of Oz? It starts off in Kansas. It's black and white.
Yes, yes.
And as soon as she steps out of the house in Oz,
that's right,
everything went
color.
To color.
Yeah.
And although there had been some color film before, that one is the one that converted the audience such that we now, after that, we expected color.
But you didn't get it every time, and you know why? Do you know why? It cost too much.
It sure did.
It, color was so more expensive than black and white that when John Ford was wanting to do The Quiet Man,
yeah,
and he couldn't get anybody to finance it because it was going to be in color, and it's going to be very expensive to be filmed over there, that he finally agreed for one thing. He agreed to make a movie with Maureen O'Hara and John Wayne and make it first before the Quiet Man came out. And do you know which movie that was that spurred him on to be able to fund The Quiet Man, which did not make a whole lot of money, but this movie did make a whole lot of money because it was in black and white.
You see the depth of this man's knowledge of the Hollywood movie industry, and he couldn't guess The Wizard of Oz.
You know what it was? I couldn't figure out what year it was. My math is really it's really backslid.
But think of the cultural impact of The Wizard of Oz. I mean, what child doesn't very early on learn Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Yeah.
And
there's never been a song more beautiful than that one song.
Right.
And Judy Garland was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, she had several other good performances, but nothing really in terms of memorable came up to her performance in the
Meet
Wizard
Me in St. Louis was pretty good.
Huh?
Meet Me in St. Louis.
There were some pretty good ones, but your audience out there, probably every one of them has seen The Wizard of Oz more than once.
Yeah.
And they'd be strapped to tell us the plot of Meet Me in St. Louis.
I was thinking of that movie actually the other day because I went to Premiere 6 and Into the Storm. The tech work on that movie was unbelievable. I mean, to see all of those tornadoes that ripping through the schools and everything else, it had everybody on the edge of their seats. And I did the same thing when I was watching The Wizard of Oz back when I was a kid. And the funny thing about it is, it wasn't a real tornado anyway. Can you believe? It looked so real to me on the screen.
Are you shattering a childhood belief?
But there is a Santa Claus.
There was no tornado. And her house wasn't picked up, spun around, and set back down in one piece.
No.
Well, it's also the anniversary today of a very significant patent.
P-A-T-E-N-T?
Yeah, was filed, 162 years ago. But on this date, the patent for a device which changed not only the domestic scene, but also permitted industrialization of something that was very much a cottage industry before that. And what's interesting to me when I'm studying law, the law of trademark and patent and name registration, brand names, was influenced by this, because today a Mr. Singer, on this day about 163 years ago, was given a patent for his new device. And it became so dominant that the term Singer around the world became a generic word. And for a time, the company lost the ability to protect it because people were making, all over the world, people started making machines that would sew cloth together, put cloth together, and they were called Singers.
Yeah.
Because of the generic name. I remember studying when Xerox first became so popular. The company worked very hard to try to convince us all that we shouldn't call them Xerox copies. They were afraid they would lose their name as Singer had. And they managed to protect it.
Well, you know, did you as a kid, I was fascinated with airplanes. And my grandmother had a Singer sewing machine. and it had one of those foot pedals, and it'd make the everything go round and round, and I would pretend that that was an airplane, and I was flying that airplane. I don't know how old I was, but I couldn't have been very old.
Well, I sat on the floor and would work the thing.
Yeah. It was fascinating.
It is. And a simple mechanical device. But you see, this was before the Civil War, but it set up the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. After the Civil War, particularly up in the Northeast, when they started using all the water power of the rivers and such. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd see a factory that would have maybe 1,000 singers, mm-hmm, all lined up with ladies and such, you know, turning out clothing.
Now, there's another, an appliance that's just like that, the singer, and what is it, the refrigerator? Is that the one?
Just like a singer?
No. The name just goes right along with the appliance.
Oh, yeah. Frigidaire.
Frigidaire, that's it, yeah. Frigidaire, yeah. And when you think of, everybody thought a Frigidaire was just
that was a generic term.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, whether they lost it or not, I'm not sure. But yeah, that's another good example of the first one, you know, becomes the, well, even Bush Hog. Yeah, that was a brand name originally. And you'll see people selling rotary cutters, and I have to think, what's a rotary cutter? Oh yeah, it's a Bush Hog. Yeah.
I never thought of that.
That's us farmers.
I almost lost my eye because of one of those Bush Hogs. Threw a thorn through my eye when I was at Bush Hogging. I was one of those people that didn't believe in goggles.
Yeah. My worst experience was when the pet dachshund followed me out to the machine and walked under it as I got on it. Oh, my. See, local history, we ought to touch on local history a little bit. I mentioned an earlier show that we had found a trial docket from 1866, a book listing all the lawsuits that were being filed in the circuit court right after the Civil War. I finally had time to go through it closely and wrote last Sunday about some interesting stories. There's many, many stories that would come out of that. But what caught my eye was how many debt lawsuits, collecting debts, were being filed, because apparently during the Civil War, the courts were shut down, mm-hmm, the local courts. And one of my favorite characters in our local history, which we've talked about before, Alfred Miller, mm-hmm, was, before the war, not only something of an opportunist, but he was primarily what they called a note shaver.
Now, did you get this information from Abby?
Ebby commented on my article when I saw him on Monday. He threatened, uh-huh, to hit me over the head with a 2x4. But after having made the threat and backed me up, he said it was an interesting story and that I was right on. I believe it's his great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he's the same one that came in here as an orphan. Not an orphan. His widowed mother brought him in, but she apprenticed him to a hatter. And he learned the hat-making trade. But then, just for bragging rights, he decided to paddle all the way from Murphy Springs to New Orleans, which he did. And as far as I know, he's the only one that ever has done it, which is what he wanted to be known for. But then while he was in New Orleans, he did some sharp trading, booked passage back with a load of merchandise, which quickly sold here, and he found himself in the merchant business and prospered. But he also figured out, see, this was back before we had banks that would give you a line of credit, mm-hmm, no credit cards, things of that sort. So every merchant had to carry the notes. And, you know, at the end of the month, the merchant has a pile of paper and no money to buy more merchandise. So that's when people like Alfred Miller would come in. And on a discount, obviously, he'd buy that paper and become what in the law we call a holder in due course, which means he had an absolute right to collect the amount in that paper, no matter what he had paid for it. Mm-hmm. And he apparently was sitting on a pile of paper at the end of the war, and as soon as the courts opened up, Alfred's right down there filing. Well, he filed on the former mayor. He filed on a number of very prominent Confederate officers, and was using the leading attorneys in the area, Reedy, and Palmer, and the Keebles, to collect these debts. And from the records, the best I could tell is when he was filing on these prominent individuals, they were settling. Mm-hmm. I'm sure for a fraction of it, but they were settling. But those that weren't able to come up with the cash, he was able to condemn property, land, and mm-hmm. such. And he only lived, he died in 1868. And I'm sure somebody in the family or one of his associates picked up what was left. But he was adding considerably to his fortune as a note shaver.
You know, you were mentioning about the merchants kept the bills on individuals who come in when they did not have the money to pay for it at the time. That's something that's carried on not too far from where we are right now, because I can remember all of the county stores, Wilson Mitchell and Browns and right. some of the others.
Right, in the rural communities where, in fact, a lot of families hardly even dealt in cash. Mm-hmm. You know, they would be dealing and this certainly up until mid-20th century was very much common in the rural areas. You know, why do you need cash? We're raising what we're going to trade or mm-hmm. use. And then, you know, you have Sears and Roebuck, who figured out that by setting up a line of credit, revolving credit, they called it back then, they could facilitate sales. And, you know, the losses they took in trying to collect were nominal compared to the volume of business they generated by offering that line of credit. And of course, it's all been pretty much taken over today by the universal credit cards. But same
well, you
system.
Were telling me something I didn't know, because I was telling you.
I try to do that every day. You talking about the Wizard of Oz?
I'm trying to tell you. Next time, just give me the year so I don't have to.
The math is what threw you. Okay.
Yeah, everything's okay.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. What did I?
Was I saying anything?
Something.
What was I talking about?
You said I told you something you didn't know.
Oh, yeah. The Discover card. The yeah. Sears and Roebuck started the Discover card.
Yeah, way back when. This would have been in the late 60s. And obviously what they were trying to do was, where they had a lock on credit being used in their store,
mm-hmm.
they were losing it to the bank cards, they were called back then, mm-hmm. what eventually settled down to mostly Visa and MasterCard. But all banks, even our local banks, are coming out with these credit cards.
Right.
And so Sears moved into that with the Discover card. I don't know when they sold it or when they got out of it. It no longer now is affiliated with Sears. But, yeah, that was their card.
They had the best marketing business of anybody back then. Sears and Roebuck was king all the way across the country at one time.
Yeah, I have a good friend in Nashville who's very prosperous. Most of it came to him from his father, who ran a local, as there used to be, Goldstein's here, local department store up in Kentucky.
Oh, the store. Yeah,
yeah, up in Kentucky. And he said, I asked him, well, how did your father develop, you know, the wealth that he had just running a small department store? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, he would go over to the post office to pick up merchandise coming in. And he saw all these packages mm-hmm. being delivered through the mails and over in a railroad depot from Sears and Roebuck. So he started buying every month. You know, with a little bit he had left over, he'd buy Sears and Roebuck stock. When he died, he was a major shareholder of Sears and Roebuck just because he was observant and saw that, you know, these people are going somewhere. And they ended up with, you know, quite a substantial holding in the Sears and Roebuck back in the 60s. That was, you know, blue chip stock.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we need to do on your program in the future is for you to run these mysterious questions through Mentoriette, and then let her work with you on how to present those particular things to me.
Are you looking for an excuse?
Yes, any excuse I can find.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break, and it's the Greg Tucker Show.
Southern Community Bank. We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. Our support to the community is unwavering. And our service is clearly unique.
I'm City President Sean Hart. Come see us at Southern Community Bank, where we still offer free checking with no minimum balance, no monthly maintenance fee, and free ATM withdrawals from any ATM.
Southern Community Bank, 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to Doubletree. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
MTSU Arts, presented by Ascend Federal Credit Union, is your ticket to hundreds of visual and performing arts events held on the MTSU campus each year. Become a member of the MTSU Arts Patron Society for the 2013 to 2014 season and enjoy member-only benefits, including special events, exhibits, and performances. Visit mtsuarts.com to join today.
If you've got a driver that's about to be 16, I invite you to stop by e1auto.com, 1605 Memorial Boulevard in Murfreesboro. We've got the perfect $3,000 to $7,000 truck or car for your soon-to-be 16-year-old or high school driver. This is Jimmy Evans, owner of E1 Auto. Stop by today because we specialize in $3,000 to $6,500, even $7,500 trucks and cars. That's e1auto.com, 896-2277 or 896-CARS.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with Greg Tucker.
I stumbled on something the other day. I enjoy trying to solve mysteries. Now, these are not big mysteries. Probably only someone like myself would be curious, but I have entertained myself and hopefully some of my readers by figuring out why certain streets are named as they're named, particularly in the old original area. And mm-hmm. one of two that has always intrigued me is college, because most of us assume that, has something to do with the old Union University or the Tennessee College for Women. No, the College Street goes way before them. When the name came up. Now, originally it was High Street on the Platte, and then they named it Lytle Street because of his development, subdivision development north of town. But somewhere in the early 1800s history of Murfreesboro, the name College was put on it, which is still College Street today. Well, I was reading the official Tennessee history in the Blue Book of James K. Polk. Mm-hmm. And it says James K. Polk was a graduate of Murfreesboro College in Rutherford County. I had not come across Murfreesboro College before. The story is that James K. Polk went to Bradley Academy. And I've always had a little trouble with that because Bradley Academy was struggling and folded just shortly after the time that he was supposedly here. So now I'm curious that maybe there was a Murfreesboro College for a few years back in the 18-teens, the first decade or so of Murfreesboro, and maybe it was over in the area that became College Street. And also that raises questions about the Bradley history. But this is the official Blue Book history, a little paragraph on James K. Polk.
As the chief historian in Rutherford County, it's up to you to settle that particular question. That is part of your responsibility.
All right. And if anybody can give me any kind of clue on Vine Street, I'd appreciate it because I haven't found no connection whatsoever. I mean, logically, you'd think it must have been some vines of some kind over there, but I've not been able to find any connection yet.
Is there anywhere in our history any books or any print anywhere to denote where each street began? What was the cause of the names? Because you and I have been over this a number of times, and that's something that just irritates me, because there has to been a very good reason to name those streets to honor some people or whatever. There have been some that's been named in the last 15 years that honor people for their work and for their patriotism.
I'd say anything since about the mid-20th century is documented in the city records, but these would be, you know, outlying streets. The ones in the old downtown area are the ones that I've been trying to figure out. And in the last book, I dealt with several of them, but College, you know, I can tell the history. If you go back to the land records, because when they define where the lot is or whatever, mm-hmm. if there's a street named, the street will be named. And you can see there that it started off in those records as Lytle. And we know from the original plat that it was High Street. Then it was Lytle. And then it changes to College. Mm-hmm. So something happened. And in all probability, for instance, you go a college, remember back in those days, was basically a high school, mm-hmm. anything beyond grammar. There's a College Street in just about every town. Mm-hmm. Woodbury has a College Street. And at one time, there was a private prep school or high school, whatever you want to call it, on that street. So must be something like that on College Street. But this this lead is the first I've seen that suggests that there really was a Murfreesboro College by that name at one time. Or whoever writes the blue book in the Tennessee history mm-hmm. for the state is making stuff up. I hope that's not the case.
Well, you know,
and there's some great stories. You and I have talked about how we almost had a MacArthur Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
a Broad Street.
We should have a MacArthur Boulevard.
Yeah, and it was stopped by the veterans, largely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there should be a way that we can go into the computer and hit Murfreesboro and hit streets and then get the history of the naming of each and every one of those.
There are in other communities. One of the best ones is Key West. There is a book that takes every street in Key West. Now, that's a little easier because Key West is surrounded by mm-hmm. water, and you mm-hmm. can only have so many streets, and gives the history of the naming of each street. And that might have what prompted me to have at least one story in Rutherford Ramblings, still available at the Country Gourmet and at Oakland's and Hooper's. On the old street names.
Well, what dastardly deed are you planning for 2 weeks from today?
I have been curious about how names evolve. You know, what's a popular name today and what were popular names? And one whole category that has disappeared, and I've started collecting some of them, is names for girls, ladies, women, mm-hmm. that start with EU. Used to be very popular.
Yeah.
There was Eustacia, Eunice, Eula, Eudora, and my favorite, Uramay.
Uramay, all right. That's got to be a Southern name.
Yeah, all these are out of records of local people.
My grandmother was Eulamay.
Eulamay, all right. Eula's on the E-U-L-A, mm-hmm. Eula. And if anybody out there can come up with any others, now they have to be documented. Let's not make stuff up.
Yeah.
EU, I'd be interested in it.
I love those names. I love Southern names, period. So 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today, we'll probably talk about money.
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 Oh, my favorite subject. All right, guys. We will see Greg back in 2 weeks from today, and we'll see you guys in the morning at 9:00.